Welcome to Ira's Everything Bagel, where I talk with intriguing people about everything, their passions, pursuits, and points of view. Please like, share, and subscribe. It really helps the channel, and I appreciate it. My guest today is Dennis R. McBride. He is the mayor of the Milwaukee suburb of Wauwatosa. Did I get it right, Dennis? Wauwatosa?
Pretty close. Wauwatosa.
Yeah. Say it again for me. Go ahead.
Wauwatosa.
Oh, yeah. I thought I did that. All right. Wauwatosa. I thought I got it.
Dennis. Perfect.
Yeah, thank you. Dennis brings a rare combination of journalism, public policy, and law to the mayor's office with degrees from the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, Princeton University, and New York University. But it's what he and his city lived through starting in 2020 that gives our conversation its relevance. Often described as Milwaukee's second downtown, Wauwatosa functions as an urban suburban edge city, and we'll talk about that. And Dennis has been at the center of its most challenging and defining moments. First elected mayor in 2020 and then reelected in 2024, he led his community through a convergence of pandemic, protest, and deep political polarization. Those experiences inspired his new book, A City on the Edge: Pandemic, Protest, and Polarization. And in this episode, we unpack what happens when national tensions collide with local leadership and what it really means to govern when your city becomes a flashpoint. The book is published by Indiana University Press. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, bookshop.org, and all the usual places. And for everything about Dennis, you can follow him on Facebook. And Dennis, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Well, you look very grim. So are we still going through these times that you wrote about, or are we eased up a little bit?
Well, there's always something, you know. We're working on all kinds of projects. We just went through property tax time, so the natives are restless.
I understand. Is there any chance of changing the pronunciation of the city or changing the name of the city for my benefit, just so I don't stumble on it?
Well, it means Land of the Firefly or Little Firefly. So if you want to call it, we have a lot of things that are called Firefly. So if you want to make it easy on yourself, you can do that.
I'll do Wauwatosa, right?
Wauwatosa. It's a Potawatomi Indian word.
Oh, excellent. The impetus for writing the book was your own experience living through a particular period of time. And it obviously had an impact on you because you took the time to write the book. It's a fascinating look at really a period of time where a lot of stuff, it reminds me in a way, and I'm old enough to remember the 60s where there was so much going on. Yes. And yet you were in a unique position of being in authority, a mayor, and you had to deal with a bunch of stuff. So I'll stop talking and let you explain why you decided to write the book, what you think people want to take away from the book, and then we'll continue from there.
Well, the book is not just about Wauwatosa. It's about Seattle, Portland, Minneapolis, and all the other cities that went through it as well. The publisher said, yes, Wauwatosa, but please talk about other places as well, because that's important. The way I sold the book was to say that everything that happened in America in 2020 happened in Wauwatosa. We were a microcosm of America. And in fact, the first chapter is called Microcosm for that reason. We went through the pandemic like everyone else. We had 98 days and nights of protests based on police shootings of Black people, 40 nights at my house. We had a mass shooting at the state's busiest shopping mall. And we were the city in Wisconsin that put Joe Biden over the top and the state that put Joe Biden over the top. We provided more than half of his margin in Wisconsin. So literally everything that was important and happening in America that year was happening in my hometown of about 49 to 50,000 people.
When you were going through it, were you looking at it both through the lens of an elected official and through the lens of a potential book author?
I couldn't help it. You've interviewed my brother, Joe, who's a noted author, and he's published 25 books. I'm 23 behind him right now, but and my sister's published books and all that. So our parents were newspaper reporters, and I'm a journalism major. So everything I do is through that lens as well. My dad always called reporting an instant, you know, the first draft of history. And I was looking at that, but then I was thinking about the long-term impacts too. I'm also a student of history. I can't help it. I read histories all the time. I've written some histories. This is one. So I was thinking of the long term as well as the short term. And I knew there was a book in there.
Were you taking notes during that time as well as experiencing everything that went on?
I was not taking notes. I was keeping it up here. The city administrator keeps saying, God, you have a memory for dates. And that's because that's the way I function. But of course, once I started writing it, it just got embedded in my mind. But as you know, there are over 100 pages of footnotes in this book as well. And the reason for that is twofold. One is I needed to do the research to make sure I got the facts right. But the other thing was I there are naysayers. And I wanted, if they said, oh, I don't agree with that, well, look at footnote 54 in the sixth chapter and tell me if you agree with the Washington Post or not. You know, so
what struck me about you, Dennis, in terms of the book is that you plainly and proudly state that where your political positions are, you fall within the quote unquote progressive wing of everything. But at the same time, it's not the crazy wing. And what I mean by that is you're looking at it from a practical point of view. You know, you're not going to be rabidly anti-police or rabidly against law and order, but yet you have obviously progressive leaning. So that was an interesting part of the book that you were getting it from all sides, I guess is the easiest way to say it.
Absolutely. I frankly took more grief from the far left wing than the far right wing, but I took a lot of grief from the far right wing too. But I knew about my hometown that the people were centrist. They lean left, they vote left, but now they didn't used to, they do now. But they also wanted people to follow the law. And there's a part in the book that you've probably read where someone said, well, you need to fire that police officer right now, and you need to fire that police chief right now. And I said, I don't have the authority to do that. And the woman said, well, you think too much like a lawyer. And I said, guilty as charged. I'm a lawyer. I follow the law. I've taken 8 oaths of office of various kinds over my career. And I will follow the law. I will give people due process. And if you lost your job or were in danger of losing your job or going to prison, you would want due process as well.
Right. Well, your background in the law helps too, but I think it's your general nature to look at things from that lens. Of all the things that went on starting when you became mayor, what was the most, I don't want to say traumatic, but the one that for you signified major change going on, and not necessarily positive change, but let's use the term upheaval. That might be better. What was the one event for you that triggered this upheaval in this? And I mentioned it at the beginning, Edge City. Why don't we talk about that first? And then I'll come to the question. How do you define that? Because it's known as an edge city, which is a suburban area that's right on the edge of a major urban area. But I'd rather have the definition come from you.
Yeah, there was a book written in 1991 called Edge City by a Washington Post reporter, and he defined various places like Wauwatosa. In fact, Wauwatosa is mentioned in the book. We are the oldest suburb of Milwaukee on the east side, and we border Republican-dominated Waukesha County on the west side, and the west side is much newer than the east side. So, and then we have, as you mentioned, we are the second downtown. We have the state's busiest shopping mall, the state's largest medical center, factories, colleges, and universities. We have all those things that people associate with urban America, and yet, if you go to our west side, it's much more car-oriented. The east side was developed by the streetcar and the west side by the car. So we are truly an edge city in that regard. But we are also, of course, a city on the edge during 2020, where, again, we had 98 days and nights of protest just based on for racial reasons. But we also had all the stresses and strains of the pandemic and the mass shooting. So emotionally, we were definitely a city on the edge, and America was on the edge all through 2020.
Were you surprised when you started to research it? As you mentioned, the publisher wanted you to broaden your lens and include other cities and look at America in general in that sense by using profiles of other cities. Were you surprised at the fact that what you were experiencing in your city was being experienced in other cities as well?
Not at all. First of all, I spent over 26 years in the federal government, 24 plus years with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. I was raised by people who wanted racial justice. So we have not solved our racial problems in America, and we keep pushing them to the side. And this current administration keeps pretending that slavery never happened and that we should ignore all of that. So I knew that those wounds had not been healed. I'm also, of course, a student of government. And when I went to Princeton and studied for my master's in public administration, I, of course, studied cities all around America. And I continue that study on a more informal basis as I go along. I also have cousins in Seattle. I follow Seattle. I have a brother in Berkeley, California. I have a brother in Washington, D.C., a brother in St. Louis. I talk to them. What's going on in your cities? I'm just fascinated by it. And I spent 6 years in Boston practicing law, and I lived in New York, and I lived in Washington, D.C. for a summer, and Miami for a summer. So I've got all of those connections.
But from your perspective, it was interesting what you just said about racial tensions and racial justice. And I'll question it from this point of view. You're looking at it from your background with the parents you had, with the environment you had. And you're saying that it's still not solved. And yet I grew up in a mixed a racial community, and it was not a rich one as well. And I always find people that grew up in somewhat affluent circumstances view race relations differently than those of us who grew up with races of all kinds and with the income level being similar as well and it not being affluent. So I wonder what you, from your point of view, what you see as racial divisions not being healed, because it seems to me it was better after the 60s and into the 70s, and then it got bad again. Now, I'm just trying to get my head around as to what you see needs still to be resolved within that world.
Well, as I said, I worked for the EEOC, and I litigated cases on behalf of people who were experiencing job discrimination. Some of those people were Black. Some of them were Hispanic. My two most prominent cases involved undocumented women getting raped on the job in agricultural facilities in Iowa. I was on PBS Frontline for that. I had a big case against Target Corporation on behalf of young Black people who are not getting hired as managers. So I saw that firsthand through their eyes and by representing them. But Milwaukee is the most segregated, arguably, if not the most segregated, certainly one of the top three most segregated places in America. So I see that every day. Wauwatosa has evolved, but it's still 80% white. Milwaukee has the lowest percentage of Black people in suburbs of any metropolitan area in the country. Major metropolitan area. So we are rigidly segregated to this day, and that limits people's opportunities. It limits the quality of education in the Milwaukee public schools because the students are disproportionately poor. And we argue at the state capitol all the time about how to solve that problem. And people are literally afraid to cross borders. The people in Waukesha County don't even want to cross 124th Street to come into Wauwatosa to go to our shopping mall because they think bad people are going to be there. It's crazy. And I see that every day as a person, and I see it every day as a mayor.
What about
I work with other mayors, all the other mayors in Milwaukee County. We meet once a month, and we hash out our common issues.
What about the case, though, where you have what they call, quote unquote, self-segregation, where you get to the university and Black students want to just have a special space for Black students. It does happen. And yes. So you have to mesh that in with what you interpret as segregation in general in a city of your size, when there's some choices made by certain groups, minority groups, that they want to be treated differently and treated within their own group. So how do you, I guess the larger question is how do you balance those two out? How do you mesh those two out and realize there is that part of it as well?
Well, we see that in our high schools too, not just nationally, but locally. We have two high schools in Wauwatosa, Tosa East and Tosa West, and our student population is about a third minority, and there is self-segregation many times. But the only way we're going to break that down is for people to get together, whether it's in the theater or sports or other activities, and just by sitting shoulder to shoulder in class. We It's because that we are segregated residentially that we don't have a common language. And people often say, why does Wauwatosa seem to have racial problems? And I say, because we have the state's busiest shopping mall and we have the state's largest medical center, and Black and white people come together in Wauwatosa in ways that they never do anywhere else in the whole Milwaukee area. We are the crossroads in so many ways, emotionally and physically. We're in the middle of the metro area, and people come together here. And it's not always, you know, there's friction. Let's just leave it at that. And so we have to find ways to reduce the self-segregation and get along with each other. It's not easy.
And there's also cultural differences as well.
Yes. Right.
As well.
Which get exacerbated by segregation.
Gotcha. The question that you faced as mayor, while there were several questions you faced and several issues you faced, in reading the book, I mean, there's so much to pick from, because you had the pandemic as well as the racial issues as well. So you had, it was a perfect, not a perfect storm. It was almost a perfect brew of toxic material there. What was your biggest challenge as mayor and that you address in the book?
Well, easily the biggest challenge was trying to get people to understand the need to, for the right wing to understand that people have a right to protest, and the left wing that people who protest need to follow the law. The ACLU was on my case. I was a member of the ACLU for many, many years, and they kept saying, you're not doing this, you're not doing that. I said, I'm following the guidelines that you have on your website. And I'm asking people to follow those guidelines. Please, they can't block streets. They can't shoot guns at people's houses. They can't protest outside my house at 2 a.m. with blaring car horns. They can't drive on people's lawns. That's not anywhere in your guidelines. So I had an enormous amount of frustration trying to get people to understand that, as well as the fact that as mayor, I had no authority to hire, fire, or discipline a police officer.
It was that structure of government, of city government, that you couldn't do
right.
it. And people may not know this. It's in the book. You're the most underpaid employee of the city.
Yes. $30,000 a year.
For the grief.
So. Well, you know, people say to me, you have a thankless job. And that is literally not true. Almost every day I get thanked by people when I'm at the athletic club, at the grocery store, walking down the street. Yes, it was hard. I didn't sleep well during 2020. But people do thank me all the time. They understand. It's really a good city to represent.
Was it awkward or dangerous for you, because it's a relatively small city and you're easily findable? I don't know if that's a word, but you're easily findable. People were coming to your house.
Right.
It's got to be hard on you and the family, because instead of going to your office at City Hall and discussing things there, or writing a letter, calling, emailing, texting, whatever, you'd have people physically showing up. That had to be a challenge to, just from a safety point of view.
Well, yes, and this is in the book. I told my adult children, two of whom live in Chicago and one of whom lives in New York City, I said, there's a non-trivial chance that someone's going to take a shot at me this year. And I wasn't doing that to, you know, get emotional. I was just stating a fact. And in fact, someone shot a BB through a window in our enclosed front porch. There's a picture of that in the book. When I show that picture, people are horrified. One woman at church said, oh, my God, you mean people carry guns in these protests? I said, I'm sorry, where have you been? Everybody in America carries guns, the right wing and the left wing. So I had to be on guard all the time. In fact, I still have some of that PTSD with me. I still look over my shoulder at times. It's died down. It's been 5 years, but there. Rob Reiner got killed. Charlie Kirk got killed. Melissa Hartman got killed. Federal judges get killed. People in Congress get death threats. I've had death threats.
Because your city is relatively small, I know in other cities around America, certain elected officials, mayors particularly, governors obviously as well, have some security provided either by the state, in the case of a governor, such as a highway right. patrol, or in a city such as the municipal police department. You didn't have any of that.
No, No. I mean, the police certainly came when 150 protesters showed up at my house, and then I watched the shoving matches outside. But no, I have no security. And I will say this. You mentioned that we're a relatively small city, which is true. We're just a little under 50,000. We're the 14th largest city in Wisconsin. But during the workday, we're the fourth largest city in Wisconsin after Milwaukee, Madison, and Green Bay. We have over 105,000 people here every day. So I always say we punch above our weight, and it creates stresses and strains and challenges for mayors and city councils to deal with, and police departments and fire departments. So we function as a relatively medium-sized city rather than a small city.
Right. I wanted to quote something from the book. You said a city's fundamental mission, which I agree with, is to provide basic services to residents: water, roads, garbage collection, snow plowing, traffic regulation, public health services, and police and fire protection. And I always think about that because I see cities around the country where some of that just doesn't exist at a decent level. It exists, but it's not where it should be. And given taxation at levels unheard of 20, 30 years ago, you wonder where all the money goes, separate from the federal government, separate from the state government, just even in municipal governments. Is there an answer to that? And I know that's not quite what the book is about, but it's still mm-hmm. what a city is supposed to provide.
Right. And I thought I coined this, but I found out that Mayor LaGuardia in New York coined it about 90 years ago. But I always say there's no Democratic way to pick up the garbage and no Republican way to plow the snow.
Right.
We're just here to provide service. And we have the blessing in Wisconsin of being nonpartisan. There's an interesting historical reason for that, but I didn't run as a Democrat or a Republican or a Libertarian. I just ran. our budget in Wauwatosa is 25% lower than it was in 1970.
Interesting.
So and that's because the state keeps turning the screws on us, and it's harder and harder and harder to provide those services every year, but we find a way to do it. We are fortunate to have a lot of new development, redevelopment, because we're an old city, and that keeps us afloat. But it's very hard, and I understand other mayors. I will say, read the editorial in the Washington Post today about Chicago, and it'll make your hair stand on end. Some cities just overspend, and they need to tighten up. One thing about Wauwatosa, I was raised in a neighborhood full of a bunch of tight-fisted Yankees, and they made me act that way too. Even though I'm an Irish guy, I took on that. I'm a tight-fisted guy.
Well, I think one of the things you said points to the issue, and that is in your particular city, it's nonpartisan. Unfortunately, in other cities, some cities around the country, it's partisan, even right. if it's not officially partisan, and that causes issues as well. I don't know that there's any solution to that. But getting back to your book again, and it covers so much territory, we don't have a lot of time to do it, but I wanted people to get a taste of it. It's called A City on the Edge, Pandemic, Protest, and Polarization. It's published by Indiana University Press, available in all the usual places as well. Dennis R. McBride, who is the mayor of the town, or it's actually, I said town, but city, really.
It's a city of the second class, yes.
Yeah, city it's an edge city, as we talked about as well. What would you want people to take away most importantly in terms of solutions? Because what you talk about, again, and really the title gives it the meaning of the book. You're dealing with all kinds of stuff, pandemic, protest, polarization, racial, et cetera. What do you want people to take away from your book as a possible solution to some of this? One of which I think you've given during our conversation, which is your more balanced approach. You acknowledge where you come from politically, but you see both sides.
Well, yes, thank you for that. Again, people have asked me, how did you navigate your way through 2020? And I said, you follow the North Star. The North Star is the law. You just have to do that. I had legislators say to me, well, you need to do something different. And I said, you write the law, I follow the law. So if you want to change the law, I'll follow that law. But beyond that, and this is going to sound perhaps namby-pamby, or, well, obviously, the solution is we need to try to go back to where we came from. We are so extremely polarized right now, and there's so much negativity, and it literally comes from the top of our country right now. The president's response to the murders of the Reiners is just appalling. We have to go back to some level of civility, a level of understanding that the other side isn't completely wrong just because you disagree with them, that it's healthy to have two parties so that we don't all go to one extreme or the other, and then we should learn from each other. But the most important lesson, and my mother especially taught me this because she was vice chair of the state Democratic Party. She got along with Republicans well. My father was very pragmatic as well. You have to get involved. It's a team sport. It's a participant thing. It's not a spectator sport. We all are involved in government. If you're not going to run for office, and I wish everybody would do that at least once, get involved, support your community, support the candidates, make sure that they have the support they need. One of the things that people are trying to do in this country right now is make us all feel hopeless and fearful. We can't be hopeless and fearful. We have to believe in our system, and we have to make the system work. When we withdraw from the system gets manipulated by people that we don't like, and then we have ourselves to blame.
And do you think also coming from your balanced position that academia as well as national media tend to need to be a little bit more diversified, that they tend to be a little bit in one camp and not the other?
Yes, I saw that when I went to three different universities, all, you know, different parts of the country. Even though, again, I count myself as a progressive, and if you ask what my positions are, you'd probably put me in that camp. I still, if I tried to express a contrary opinion or somebody else did, sometimes the professor would come down on it. And it could be a conservative, it could be a liberal. But we also have students now who don't seem to be able to engage in argument in the good sense, which is to have the clash of ideas and see who comes out on top intellectually rather than otherwise. We all have such thin skin right now, we can't talk to each other. We have to lower the temperature and learn how to converse again on a level that is civil and intellectual rather than based on fear and opinion.
Are you optimistic that we'll reach that point?
I doom scroll like everyone else, but I have to be optimistic. I have to believe in the system. You mentioned the 60s. I lived through the 60s. I talk about that in the book. We went through hell in the 60s. Assassinations, the Vietnam War protests, the civil rights movement, people just not getting along, buildings getting blown up 75 miles away from me in Madison. It wasn't easy to be optimistic during that time, but we had faith and we moved forward and we've gone back. It's the old two steps forward, one step back, but we have to keep marching. That's the only way we're going to do this.
That's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Dennis R. McBride. He's the mayor of the Milwaukee suburb of Wauwatosa. Did I get it right, Dennis?
You've been very good.
Thank you. But he's author also of A City on the Edge, Pandemic, Protest, and Polarization. It's published by Indiana University Press, available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, bookshop.org, and all the usual places. And you can follow Dennis on Facebook. And Dennis, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you. It's really been my pleasure.
Thank you. And join us every Thursday for a new schmear on Ira's Everything Bagel.